Now it is my privilege to introduce to you guys my speaker. Please offer, first let me tell you a little bit about him. I just met him, but I know he has 26 years sober, and he got sober in Orange County, and he lives in Corona, California. Let's welcome Blaine.
Hi, I'm Blaine. I'm an alcoholic. And, I was sitting there. I was real nervous, and then I saw everybody come up and get their chips, and I calmed down, you know. And it takes me back to when I first got sober. And first of all, I want to thank Bill for asking me to speak tonight. He asked me about 2 years ago. And I guess I could say sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, huh? But thank you, Bill, for asking me. I'm not a formal speaker. I've maybe spoke maybe three or four times. And I want to thank Suzanne for welcoming my friend Lenny and I into Visalia today. I had a nice dinner, drove us over here. Couldn't get any better. So thank you, Suzanne. And I borrowed Suzanne's big book because I left mine in my car because she drove us over here. And I like carrying my old one around because it's all torn to shreds. And when I see that book, and it takes me back to when I first came to AA, I paid $5 for that book, and tonight I get to speak in front of you people, you know, and it's hard for me to comprehend. I grew up in an alcoholic home. There were three brothers. I was the youngest. My dad he was a general contractor. This was in San Fernando Valley. And, he just drank, and then he'd drink too much, and he'd get a little violent with my mom. Or he'd always threaten her, but I never really saw him do anything to her. But it scared the hell out of me, because I was just a little kid. But anyway, he was an alcoholic, but I really had good parents, and I was raised Catholic, and I'm one of the, I don't regret being raised Catholic. I hear a lot of people that had a problem with it. I'm not one of them. I got a lot of good teaching and belief in God from my mom, and I've actually been a blessed man my whole life. When I was 5 years old, we were in Minnesota, and it was my birthday, and I think it was my great uncle and his wife were there on this lake. They lived on this lake, and I got a fishing pole for my birthday. A fishing pole and a big baby Ruth. I thought it was about this big, but I was so little, it might have been this big. But so we went fishing the next day, and we were on two boats, little rowboats out on this little small lake. And the lake was just really calm and everything. Nobody's catching any fish. And I got irritated. I guess I was already irritated little guy back then. And I said, nobody's catching any fish here. And my great uncle's wife said, well, you make the sign of the cross, Blaine, and you'll catch a fish. So, I said, okay, hey, that's fine. So I did it, and I caught a fish. And I was the only one to catch a fish that day. So that implanted in me that if I believed that God would help me. Fast forward to I'm 11 years old now. My dad's drinking pretty bad. I'm going to Catholic school. And I think it was St. Joseph's Day, and they told us if we went into the church and we could ask for anything we wanted, and if we believed strong enough, it would happen. So I went over there, and I asked for my dad to quit drinking. And then I said, I asked God, I said, if I can ask for two things, I'd like to quit wetting the bed, because I wet the bed. I was 11 then, and it was very embarrassing. I couldn't stay at friends' houses and stuff like that. My dad quit drinking 2 weeks later after that. And I quit wetting the bed like within a month. And so then I get into my drinking. I started drinking about 15. I know the first time I remember I really had a drink other than a sip from my dad's beer and that. And my friend, his folks were celebrating a 25-year anniversary. And I was over at their house and they had champagne. And so I can remember me and my buddy, we snuck some and I'm drinking it. And man, I loved the way I felt. Because I was a little guy, I was the shortest one in our class all the time, you know, shy, all this, felt inadequate. When I drank that champagne, all that disappeared. And I thought, this is it, man. And I got drunk. And I've been thinking, I never drank without getting drunk, ever. That's what I did. And, you know, that progressed into becoming a daily drinker. I was successful in business. I was in the computer business. Was running a data center 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and drinking every day. And I never got a 502. I was never arrested. I never lost a job. None of those things. But I was married, and my wife and I would go at it every weekend. And it was really starting to bother me. And I would drink. I don't even like talking about my drunk log because it's sort of boring. You know, I would keep five cases of beer in the garage. Two in the fridge, three on the floor. And I was real proud of my rotation cycle. And I recycled cans. I had my barrels there. I kept them full, you know. And I didn't think I had a problem. Because everybody I hung around with, my two older brothers drank more than I did. You know, I was real proud of the fact that I could drink three or four beers and I was already on my way. I was lit, you know. I wouldn't stop there, but I couldn't handle it very well. So I drank primarily beer, Jack Daniels, wine. I thought I was becoming a wine connoisseur at the end there. And I didn't care what it was. And I didn't care what brand it was. I would go to the store, whatever was on sale, that's what I bought. And anyway, so that wife and I, things got, I started becoming like my dad. What happened was, you know, I'm chasing her around the house one more time. She barricades herself in the bathroom. And I take my knee and I put it through the door and put a big hole in it. And when I saw that, I just thought, what the hell's going on here? You know, it's like I'm tearing down the house that I worked so hard to get, and I didn't understand it. And shortly after that time, you know, after another one of our fights, I was just beside myself, and I lived in Buena Park at the time, and I went out in my front yard. We owned a house. I planted a tree in the front yard, had a half a can of beer in my hand, and I started crying. And I said, God, I don't know what the hell's wrong here, but please help me. those three words, please help me. And nothing really happened, except that my wife and I think when I said those words, I think about this, God knew he had to trick me to get into AA. There wasn't any way I was going to go by myself. So what he did was, I was separated from my wife. I was living with the only friend I had that didn't drink. And his daughters were, he had two daughters and they got involved in drugs. And I was having dinner one night at his kitchen table and they had a 20 question card there. And I'm eating my food and I just pick it up, I look at it and this, you gotta be kidding, you know, three drinks a night and all this, you know. And I didn't think too much of it. I thought it was ridiculous, actually. And in the meantime, my wife had made an appointment with what they called a placement counselor at my work. And this woman's job was to interview us and determine what kind of counseling we needed. And so my wife said she made an appointment. Would I go? And I said, yeah. Because I figured she's the problem, not me, you know. And so we went to that counselor, and I had one of the worst hangovers I ever had. I went on a real bender a couple nights before. And I go in there, and she says, she asked me if I have a problem with alcohol. And I just looked at her, and I said, well, maybe by some people's standards, you know, not mine. But I read that card and I thought, well, those people must think I do. And she said, well, would you put yourself up in the hospital program here? And I said, no way. I'm a big manager. I can't leave my work for 30 days. And she said, can you quit drinking for 90 days? And I said, that pissed me off. I said, I can do any GD thing I want to do. And I thought I was so tough, you know? And she thought, I got this guy right where I want him. She goes, well, will you go to AA the next night? No, this was a Sunday night. Will you go tomorrow, Monday night? I go, yeah, I'll go. So I didn't even know what the heck I promised her. I left, and my wife didn't even think I was an alcoholic. So I go to my first meeting, and I sit there, and they got the tables lined up. And I thought, what the hell am I doing here? I really screwed up this time. And because I was 30 years old, and everybody else was like guys my age now. You know, there weren't many young people. It's awesome to see all the young people tonight. And I want to welcome all the newcomers too. Because you guys remind me of where I was when I got here, you know. And I didn't want to be here. I thought an alcoholic back then was a Skid Row person. I wasn't even close, you know. And but there was something in the rooms. They were all laughing and smiling, and I was miserable, you know. And I kept going back. And I never did drink again. That's not my sobriety date. I'll touch on a few other issues I had, but I never did drink again. And I got myself, I did what you guys told me to do. I got a phone list. I got a sponsor. And that first sponsor's name was Les. And I remember I'm going to meetings, and when we'd go around the room and say, you know, I'm Blaine, I'm an alcoholic, I wouldn't say it. I said, I'm Blaine and I don't know. And I didn't know, and I didn't want to lie. And I was going to therapy, other therapy, and AA, and they said, listen for the similarities, you know. And I thought I never got a 502 and all this. And they, you guys told me, yet. You haven't got a 502 yet. You haven't lost a job yet. And I wasn't sure if I believed that or not, but I had a, my older brother was 5 years older than me, and the other, the oldest one is 10 years older. They were both having problems with DUIs, you know, 502s, wrecking cars and stuff. And I looked at the middle brother and I thought, that's where I'm going, you know? And so I stuck around, and at that left, I asked him to be my sponsor, and I was afraid because I thought, oh God, he's going to ask me if I'm an alcoholic or not. And when I tell him what I'm saying, he's going to say, get the heck out of here, you know? Going to throw me out of AA. And so sure enough, Les and I go to, we go to coffee, and sitting across from me, he says, so Blaine, are you an alcoholic? And I was so hard, I said, well, you know what, I'm not really sure. He goes, he looks at me, he says, okay. He says, what about the second half of step one? I go, what's that? He says, is your life unmanageable? I said, oh, hell yeah, it is. He said, well, you know what? Let's just start there. And you know what? I look back, and I've been thinking about that a lot lately, and I thank God for Les that he treated me like that, because I know a lot of other men would not have. And, you know, he opened the door of AA just a crack, enough for me to stay. And I'm so grateful for that. And so I got sober, and all hell broke loose. Because I didn't know which end was up or down. I didn't. It was like they turned the world upside down on me. I thought if I got sober, that marriage would, you know, get fixed. It didn't. In a lot of ways, it was worse, or I wasn't drunk, and I saw it for what it was, and I had a lot of problems with depression and anxiety attacks. And, you know, when I got sober, they'd ask me, how do you feel, Blaine? And I'd get so angry, because I didn't know how I felt. I didn't know what a feeling even was. And then somebody gave me a list. You know, you feel abandoned, feel this, feel that. I looked at it, and I started educating myself. And all I knew for sure was I was angry. I was angry all the time. I was angry I was in AA. I was angry that my marriage was falling apart, and angry about everything. And I had a lot of emotional problems. And I was talking to my sponsor, and, you know, I mean, I was doing all the things that I was told to do, but I, you know, in fact, I tried to do a fourth step, and I took it over to Les, and I remember clearly, you know, going over to his house saying, hey, Les, look, I did a fourth, because I wanted to do this thing right away. And he looked at it, and he tapped me on the back. He said, Blaine, it's okay. You don't have to do that right now. I was so messed up. And but I didn't think so, you know? And I ended up being hospitalized for what they called a near nervous breakdown, 9 months sober. And it scared the hell out of me, because my nerves were so shot that I couldn't even walk outside. I thought the sky was going to fall on me. And I was hospitalized for 3 weeks, and I just prayed the only thing I had left was my job that I did, that the only thing I had left of what I had came into AA with was my job, and I just prayed that I could just go, I just want to go back to work, that's all. I just want to get out of where I'm at. And anyway, so I finally got out of there and I started going back to work and kept going to meetings, doing the deal, and I was taking some medication for that nervous breakdown and not abusing it or nothing, even taking less than my sponsor knew, everybody knew, no secret. Well, not everybody. My sponsor knew, and a few people close to me. And but what happened was, I got to a point where I bottomed out on that too. I couldn't. I tried to get off of it at the end, and I was taking a very small amount of medicine, but I couldn't get off of it. And I had a sponsor. I was seeing a general practitioner doctor. I was seeing a lady who was trying to teach me relaxation techniques. And I was seeing a psychiatrist. And the lady who was teaching relaxation techniques, she had put me on her monitor. I went in there and she put little tips on my finger and hooked them up to the machine. It had like from 0 to 10, I registered like a 8 for nervousness. And I got to that one day where I couldn't, well, it was my point of incomprehensible demoralization, what it was. And I was at home, and I called my sponsor at the time, which was named Roger. And I said, Roger, I go, I'm going to stand up as a newcomer because I can't get off of this stuff. And he said, well, I don't think you need to do that, Blaine. I go, well, I don't care anymore because I don't want what I have. And it's too painful. And I walked out to my garage and the sun was shining in. I opened up my big book and I read a line that said what appeared to be a flimsy read was the loving hand of God. And when I read that, something happened to me. And I went down, I headed down to that meeting, and I didn't want to raise my hand again because I was so proud of the 6 years I had. And I asked God, I go, hey, if you don't want me to raise my hand, make me late. And so I was late. But they started the meeting late. And so they asked for newcomers, and I can remember raising my hand like this. Oh my God. It was like I had a bowling ball on the end of it. I didn't want to do it, but I felt I had no choice, and I did it. And I went home, and you know, now I used to go to work and carry a brown bag because I was going to hyperventilate and all this stuff, you know, scared all the time. And I got up the next morning and I was taking a shower and I'm looking up at the shower head and I just felt this ring like a hula hoop start up at the top and go down my whole length of my body and come back up again. It sort of scared me and I didn't know what it was. And I got out of the shower and I looked in the mirror and I knew something had changed. And all I knew for sure, it wasn't like I wasn't looking at the same person. And all I knew was I wasn't going to have to take anything that day, you know. And I headed off to work, and there was a long sidewalk along the building, a big, big building. About a 100-yard walk or 70 yards. And every day when I'd walk in there, my breathing would start going faster because I'd be getting all nervous. I was always afraid I was going to pass out in the middle of the office and lay there and make a big scene. And that morning I walked in and my head was still scared, but my breathing was absolutely constant, you know. And it was like God had control of my breathing and Blaine had control of his head. And that was okay. And, you know, I went home for lunch and I got in my car and I had this other experience where like, it was like I was looking down at myself and I felt this overwhelming, love. And yet I felt so insignificant, like a speck of sand, but this overwhelming love. And I started crying. I got home. I lived real close to work and I didn't know what had happened. And I opened up the big book on page 56. It talks about a guy who stood in the presence of his creator. That's what happened to me that day. And I started bawling like a baby. And after that, I had an appointment with a counselor that night. And he was the first one I shared what had happened to me with. And he wasn't like a church guy or anything, but he said, obvious. He knew I was different as soon as he saw me. He goes, wow, what's happened to you? And I said, well, you won't believe it. And I told him, and he says, well, obviously you've had a supernatural experience. And everybody who saw me then, my eyes were all lit up and I was on fire. And so the main thing about that is that, so, and then I go to see that lady who had that monitor thing, and I go into her and I said, hook that thing up to me. I go, I'm going to shut that machine off for you. And she hooked me up and that dial hardly even moved, that needle. It didn't even go to one. I was so calm. And so after that, and before that, I would look at the steps and they didn't make any sense to me as hard as I tried. But after that, I knew I had been given a reprieve, and I thought, this isn't it. You know, this is the beginning. And I read those steps again, and for the first time, they made sense to me. And I, right away, I got into the fourth step and did a fifth with my sponsor and did the rest of them. And because I knew if I didn't, I would go back to where I was, you know? And, you know, I still have that same sponsor today. His name's Jack. And I forgot to mention I was, my home group is New Pair of Glasses in Corona Thursday night. And my sponsor's name is Jack. He's been my sponsor for like 20 years. And I call him. I hear some people say, oh yeah, I got a sponsor, but they don't call them. I don't understand that. But, you know, I've been real emotional like the last month or so. And I've been getting like overwhelmed with gratitude, you know. And I wasn't even sure what it was. But, you know, when I first got sober, I used to drive the Las Vegas, and I'd play Chuck C tapes or CDs all the way there. And I would literally weep. I wanted this thing so bad. So bad. That how do I get it? How do I get it? And I want it. I want it now. And for me, it was slowly, you know. It wasn't quick. You okay?
Okay, you can go. Take
it. And so I went to the Laughlin convention. I don't know if any of you went to Tri-State this last month, but wow, I heard a great speaker. I made a bunch of I bought a CD and I made some copies, and I told people, I go, it's probably the best speaker I ever heard, you know. I still feel green. I still feel like I'm still learning. I know I'm still learning, but I want more. My sponsor, Jack, when I used to call him, I had all these problems. I'd say, Jack, I go, oh, God, you won't believe what happened now, you know. And he'd talk to me and all that. And he'd say, he'd always ask me, you want to know a secret? And I'd say, what? He said, it gets better. And he'd always do that to me, right? And he'd always trick me, you know, and say, you want to know a secret? I fell for it every time. And about 10 years ago, he said, it gets better. I said, you know what? I don't care if it doesn't have to get any better anymore. I love my life just the way it is. It's fine. He said, it doesn't matter what you want. As long as you keep working the program, it gets better. And you know what? Today, it is better. And it keeps getting better. And, I was telling Nora, I do the same things today that I did, that you guys taught me when I first got here. I stick with the winners. That's why I brought my friend Lenny. He'll be celebrating, God willing, 32 years next month. Don't turn down any AA requests. And I got a good story about that one. Because I've turned down one AA request. One. And it's killing me. And that's why I got to tell on myself. Because I was always good about it until my buddy Lenny and I, we started training for mini triathlons, right? Now we're in our 60s, okay? But this was Blaine's idea, so he joined me, and he's a Marine, ex-Marine. And so we're training and all this one day, and we rode our bikes, I don't know, 20-some miles. It was brutal. And we end up going to a meeting after. I don't remember why we were going. I mean, probably to support somebody or something. I don't know. Anyway, so we walk in there. I'm dog tired. And the leader asks me to be the speaker. And I said, oh, man. Oh, I am so tired. Right? And he said, okay. So I sit down, and they say, okay, now for our speaker, Lenny. I thought, oh, my gosh. He wasn't too tired. I mean, he was just as tired as me. But he, you know, he followed it a little better than I did. So then we have a buddy, Vinny, who has 42 years, and I thought, oh, well, I'll go ask Vinny if he's ever turned down an AA request. Right? Surely. In 42 years, he's done that, right? So I asked Vinny, I go, hey, Vinny, have you ever turned down an AA request? He goes, no, never. I thought, oh, my. So that's my little joke on myself, but I won't turn down any more, you know. But that's a joke on myself to spiritual progress, not perfection. That's the perfectionist in me, you know, but... and both Lenny and I, we take commitments in the meeting still, you know, coffee, greeter, whatever. That's what I heard when I got here. And I'll just share one more story, then I'll wrap it up. About 6 months sober, I was in Buena Park and going through a bunch of stuff. And, you know, you guys told me that I'd always hear what I need to hear at a meeting. And so I needed to hear something this particular night. It was a Friday night. And I went to this meeting, and the hour and a half, and it's going on and on. I'm not hearing anything. I'm thinking, no, this ain't happening. And they end up closing the meeting. you know, and we circle, make the circle, hold hands, say the prayer, and I didn't hear what I needed to hear, and I thought, oh my gosh, I thought maybe I'm gonna go drink after, or so, I don't know, but it scared me. And the guy next to me, we said the prayer, and our Father or whatever, and after the prayer, he said, and if you haven't had a drink today, you're a winner. And you know what? There were a lot of days that's the best I could do, you know, just not drink. So if you haven't had a drink today, you're a winner. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Blaine. Thank you very much. Let's give him a big, big applause for him, please. So Ballet Group encourages...